seminars. We do our parent path classes. We provide resources. You go to Corner Books and say, I'm a parent of a preschooler. There's books in there that the preschool staff has selected especially for you, or children's ministry or student ministry. We do a lot to try to build into the lives of our parents as they disciple their kids. But it feels a lot like we're hitting and missing. So what we've decided to do is we're going to start having a theme each year that we really lean into so that we can very well equip parents for that year on that theme. And we just decided we're just going to jump into this from the beginning. And so the theme that we're going to train you all as volunteers and staff through from January through August is on human sexuality. Now, if you're preschool, you're going, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Good. Preschoolers, no problem. Actually, it does. If you know, last fall we did a class for our preschool parents on what is healthy touch. We had a lot of parents come to that. We need to understand if we'll start young, we're really preparing our kids for a life of purity, for understanding sexuality, understanding gender, that when they get into adolescence, we'll have a lot of the questions already answered. And so we're wanting to, over the next 6 months, give you opportunities on our Next Gen Training Day on April 30th. We'll have a man by the name of Ricky Shillette here with us, and he's going to talk specifically about gender confusion, where it starts, where it comes from, all those kind of things. But we wanted to kick it off tonight by putting someone in front of you who we believed would really be able to speak well to this. So I'm just going to read this. As a youth leader, if you're unsure of how to help kids keep safe in a highly sexualized world, if you're confused about what normal sexual behaviors are, if talking about sexuality makes you uncomfortable, if you're interested in learning how to respond where sex shows up at church, you're in the right place. You didn't think I'd ever say that, did you? Erin Robinson is a coach, a counselor, a speaker, growing up her own specific attitudes toward sexuality and plenty of euphemisms to go with, she is finally discovering what healthy sexuality looks and sounds like. Erin collects scarves and kitchenware and struggles with fear and perfectionism. We could start a club. You know, there's a bunch of us. Please welcome expert gabber, movie lover, and the woman who will never be tanned. She wrote that. Miss Erin Robinson.
That's okay. Thank you. So glad to see you guys. Have you had great sessions tonight? Yeah? You excited to be here? This is so amazing. This is my first time at Midnight Madness. I had no idea what a production this was. I mean, you guys have been brought speakers from all over. I'm so excited for you. Okay, so what I want you to do is stand up. Put anything in your hands down. Stand up. And get your clapping hands ready, okay? You are going to clap the number of times that I say, okay? So if I say one, two, three, one, two, three, four, two, one, five, one. Guys are awesome. That's the best that any group this size has ever done. Okay, now, this is the second piece of it. I'm going to give you the number to clap, but then I might say half. And when I say half, you do not clap. Okay, so let's practice a half clap. Are you ready? Half. Almost, almost. Okay, all right. I know you guys can get this. So let's try it. One, any number that I say, you clap. The halves. Are you going to clap? All right. Ready? One, two, one, four, one, five, two, one, three, one, two, three, half. Oh, so close. All right. Let's try it again. I know you can do it. One, three, one, two, one, two, one, half. Oh, awesome. You guys are amazing. Give yourselves a round of applause. Nice job. All right, you can sit down. Awesome. That's the best. Man, y'all are such good clappers and listeners. Okay, so as Doug said, he asked me here to do an overview for you guys about sexual development in children. Okay, now did you ever think you would be sitting in church listening to somebody talk about sex and children? Anybody? Anybody think that? I don't think I ever thought I would be speaking on that. But as he said, this is the beginning of a series of more and more information, because what's true is that we live in a very sexualized culture. We get it everywhere, and our kids are getting it, and they are bringing it with them to church. And it is really important that you guys be educated and trained so that you know how to handle it when these things come up. And from what I've heard, and it's not just First Baptist, but there's a lot of situations where kids are doing things at school, at church, and teachers and parents are worried about that, and they're not sure if it's normal or typical. And so what we're going to do tonight is, remember, this is an overview, but I'm going to give you as much information as I can in the next hour to help you to be able to recognize some of these behaviors and where they're coming from. So let's talk about what the scriptures have to say about sex. So in Genesis 2, 20 through 25 says, "But for Adam, no suitable helper was found. So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep, and while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. The man said, 'This shall now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man.' And that is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame." And what it says earlier in verse 7 is that the Lord created Adam in his image. Male and female, he created them. The Lord has created us as sexual beings in his image. If you have never read the book Wild at Heart by John Eldridge or Captivating by Stacy Eldridge, put it on your list to read this year. It's fascinating. It's a beautiful picture of how God created us, male and female, in his image. We, as man and woman, are both sides of the Lord God. And he created us in that way to be celebrated, to be honored, and to not be ashamed. In the Psalms 139:14, the psalmist writes, "I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." I am fearfully and wonderfully made. As the woman that I am, as the man that you are fearfully and wonderfully made. And yet we live in a time where there is a lot of shame around who we are and our sexuality. And it's really important to go back and remember what the Lord says, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made in his image. 1 Corinthians 6:12 through 20. "I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything. You say, 'Food for the stomach, and the stomach for food,' and God will destroy them both. The body, however, is not meant for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies." The scriptures are very clear about who we are, and yet, in a sinful world, we've forgotten. So when we talk about sexuality, there is a difference between sex and sexuality. Sex is sexual intercourse and all that pertains to that. That's what sex is. But sexuality is so much more than that. Penner and Penner have written a fabulous book called Sex Facts for the Family. And this is what they say. Sexuality is a vital part of who we are as human beings, created in the image of God. It is that intense personal dimension that makes us a whole person, male or female. Our sexuality is with us for life, from before birth until death. It includes all the characteristics that make each of us unique. It includes all sexual behavior, from hand-holding and kissing to sexual intercourse. And all of this in God's image. Our sexuality is who we are as a man or as a woman. And that's what we want to speak to. So, what you will see in the children that come to you are attitudes towards sexuality. So I want you to think for a minute about when you were little growing up, what was the attitude towards sex in your home? Just think for a minute. Was it sex was avoided? Was it sex was to be expected? Was it a very matter-of-fact attitude about the birds and the bees? This is the body part. This is what it does. Was it that sex was, there was a sense of anticipation in your parents? Was there a healthy attitude towards sex? Was it considered wholesome? Was it a bother? Was it considered a woman's burden or a man's desire? What was the attitude in your family growing up? Think about when you first learned about sex. Did you learn about it from your parents? Did you learn about it from a friend? How about a book? A cousin? Another family member? How did you learn about sex? Because what's true is we parent from the place which we were parented. And what that means is that your parents learned about it a specific way from their parents, who learned about it a specific way from their parents, and so on and so forth, and then they taught it to you. Now, you had two parents, most of you, who came from different families and different perspectives and different attitudes on sex, and you may have seen that in the way they parented you. And then you, if you have parents, you do have parents, if you have children, you then have taught them based on your attitude. So one begets the other. And what you see in your classrooms is children who are coming from homes with this whole variety of attitudes towards sex. How many of you remember Kindergarten Cop? Anybody watch that? See that movie, right? And so Arnold Schwarzenegger is the undercover cop who's going in, and now he's a kindergarten teacher. Arnold, I'll be back, right? And he's trying to do a lesson, and what does this little boy keep doing? He's 5 years old. Boys have a penis and girls have a vagina, and Arnold doesn't know what to do with that, right? That's a pretty healthy understanding of sex that this little boy had. But how many of us were horrified? Oh my gosh, I can't believe they said those words on television, on the movie, right? There were a lot of us who felt just as uncomfortable about it as Arnold Schwarzenegger did. And throughout the movie, this little boy continues to say this, right? So kids are coming to you with attitudes that they have gotten from their parents, because that's where they learn everything, especially at a very young age. As they get older, those attitudes change based on the culture, based on their peers, based on things that they experience firsthand. So it's really important to have in mind an understanding of what these attitudes are, both yours and the children that you're working with, the kids that you're working with. So when we talk about how children are influenced, what's true is that a child will learn from their same-sex parent what it means for their sexuality. So a little girl will learn from her mother what it means to be a woman. Her mother's attitude towards womanhood and femaleness will influence her daughter's attitude towards herself. Okay? Can you think about how you see that play out? Did you see it in your own family? My sister said something to me recently. She's much younger than I am. I'm not that old, but she's much younger. And she said something that I hadn't realized. She said, you know, Mom was really self-conscious of her weight when we were growing up. And I think that we all adopted that. Because we, all of us girls, there's three of us in the family, we had always been very thin naturally. And then we went to college and you know, everything changes, right? When you go to college, first you're eating more, maybe you're exercising less, your body changes, and we put on a little bit of weight. But my sister's insight into my mom's attitude towards herself as a woman was really interesting. And we see that play out time and time again. Little girls who are on diets because Mom is on a diet, and the message they're getting is, I'm not okay the way I am. I'm not happy with who I am. And as a woman, maybe you shouldn't be too. No, that's what the little girl says. So then the opposite sex parent is where a child learns to relate to the opposite sex. So a little boy will learn how to relate to women based on his relationship with his mother. This is what influences children. I worked in a Title I school for a number of years, and we had boys in that school who did not know how to be respectful towards women. And what we could always go back and look at was they did not have a man in their life who taught them what respecting a woman looked like and sounded like. So children learn from us. And you may not be the parents of these kids who you're working with, but they are also learning from you what it means to be a little girl, to be a little boy, or to interact with those. Kids are influenced by their family of origin with the spoken messages and the unspoken messages. They're influenced by their peers, and we'll talk about when this is more and less important in a minute. And they're influenced by the culture. Now, we are down on the media, aren't we? They're just everywhere. It doesn't matter what kind of media it is. We recognize how influential the media is in our lives. But it's not just the media that's sending messages to kids. It's the music. It's the books that they're reading. In literature, we get messages about sexuality. The jokes that we tell. The dramas that we watch. There are a lot of other things that are influencing kids. And it's really important to be aware of that. So let's talk about healthy sexual principles. These are five things that I really want you to take with you today, whether it is for your own life, for the lives of your own personal children, or as you recognize this in the children that you're working with. These things are really important. Number one, sex is good and it is of God. Not just sex, not just the physical act of sex, that is true, but sexuality. Those things are good. And yet we come, especially in the church, we come from the puritanical view that sex is only for procreation and that it's a bad thing. And there, we still struggle with that. Not every single person, but many people, we really struggle with that. And what's true is the Lord has created sex for pleasure, to glorify Him and to unite a husband and a wife. That's a good thing. It has been taken out of context. It has been bastardized, if you will. But it's still a good thing. And we need to remember that and communicate those messages to our personal children. Sexual curiosity is natural. It is what it is. It's natural. It's not a bad thing to be sexually curious. Really, at any age, it's just natural. Now, there are a lot of things that are natural that can be taken to extreme, right? And that's what's important to know. But the curiosity about sexuality and sex is natural. Sexual responsibility belongs to each person. Each of us have a responsibility for our sexuality and for our sexual behaviors. It's each person's responsibility. And then finally, mutual respect and biblical standards are the guide for all sexual relationships. As believers, we have to put our hope in the Bible, right? The Lord writes these things. There's things in the scriptures that he says, do not do, do and do not do. And when he does that, he does it for our good. He doesn't do it to be spiteful. He doesn't do it to be petty. He doesn't do it to try to punish us. He does it for our good. But we, in our limited vision, often think, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It'll be fine, right? That's our sin. And when we can rely on his word as the authority, it releases us from having to choose and having to make decisions that we don't need to be worrying about making. The decision's already made. Okay, so let's talk about development. In preschoolers, before age 2, children know, they understand maleness and femaleness. Before age 2. Starting at 3 years old, they know that they will grow up to be a man or a woman. Now, I need to preface this. This is typical development. If children have developmental delays of any kind, this will not apply. And that's really important to remember. Not every child with a developmental delay is part of Through the Roof Ministry. And you may not recognize that you have children that you're working with who might be a little bit behind, okay? And then there are children who are advanced, right? But even if you're working with a kid who is gifted or talented and they're advanced, they're not necessarily emotionally advanced. So this is typical child development, all right? So I just want to make sure that I'm clear on that. So at 4 years old, they begin to understand that babies don't just appear, that they're coming from somewhere. The stork may or may not bring them, but they don't just show up, okay? Now we're getting to the age when children are beginning to ask more questions, and we'll get to that. So 3- and 4-year-olds, they delight in their bodies. They use their bodies. They run, they jump, they touch themselves, they explore their bodies. They're excited about their bodies. They're doing the things with their bodies that their bodies are designed to do. They delight in them. And all these years, they're learning these gender roles from their environment. From you guys, from their parents, from their friends, they're learning these roles. And there's a lot of conversation about gender roles out there right now, which is something for a later time. But the point is that they're learning them, and they're not all bad. Okay, so when we talk about ages 3 to 5, it's important to know that these kids at this age are what we call geographers. They just want to know where they came from and where they were before they were here. So did you hear the story about Johnny who goes to his dad and he says, Daddy, where did I come from? And Daddy, his heart kind of goes nuts and he thinks, oh, this is it. I have to tell him this is the time I've been dreading and I can't believe he's so young and now I have to tell him. Oh, I have to tell him. So Dad says, all right, this is my duty. I'm going to tell him. And he goes into this long story about sexual intercourse, sperm, eggs, pregnancy, birth, the whole nine yards. He tells him everything. And Johnny's looking at him, and if Dad had noticed, Johnny's eyes had kind of glazed over. But Dad is intent on telling Johnny the truth and the facts. And at the end, he says, Johnny, do you have any questions? And Johnny says, no, not really, except Timmy came from Memorial Hermann. Johnny didn't care to know all of that. He just wanted to know where. What hospital, Daddy? right? He's a geographer, but Daddy didn't ask the question. Daddy didn't know what he was asking. Daddy didn't follow up, right? Now Johnny knows. They are very concrete thinkers. Children in this age are very concrete. They do not have the capacity for abstract thought. And so they want to know very specific, concrete questions. Where was I? You were in mommy's tummy. Where the watermelon goes? No. They're thinking tummy, right? So when you're talking to a 3 or 5-year-old, it's important to say, well, you grew in a special place in mommy that's called her uterus or her womb. You did not grow in her stomach where the food goes, right? They're very concrete thinkers. They're curious about everything. Why is everywhere at this age, right? Those of you who have or work with this age group, they want to know why. They don't even really understand the why. They just know it's an important question to ask. So they ask it over and over and over and over and over again. And what we have to remember is we do not have to answer every why to exhaustion, but they're going to ask it. At this age, they are also beginning to desire personal privacy, which is not a bad thing. It may not be complete privacy for every kid, but it's starting. So let's talk about some healthy behaviors in preschoolers, because I know that that's probably a lot of your question, especially, and I know not everybody in here is working with preschoolers, and we're going to move on up, but I think it's important for you to understand how the development happens. Because what you'll see is while these are healthy behaviors for preschoolers, they are not healthy behaviors for 15-year-olds, right? Okay, so preschoolers, starting for little boys usually do things later, but in this one instance, they do things earlier than little girls. Starting at about 7 or 8 months, they discover their penis. They grab on, and they never let go. Little girls, they wait until they're about 9 or 10 months and they discover their private parts that we call the vulva. This is when it happens. This is when it begins. It is natural for little boys and little girls in these ages to touch and rub their genitals. That is natural. It feels good. It soothes them. It calms them when they're anxious. It's something to do when they're bored. There is a pleasure in that. It's a natural occurrence for that to happen. They explore the differences between males and females. They might touch the private parts of familiar adults or children. This is where we tend to freak out, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a freak out. They are going to do that. That's a natural behavior. We'll talk in a minute about when it's problematic. They're going to take advantage of the opportunity to look at nude people. How many times, as a parent, have you been dressing and your kid is there with you and they're just looking? They're just watching. They're not leering. They're just curious, right? That's natural behavior. And because of that, it's natural for them to want to look at each other. They like nude bodies. They like to be nude. I have known a lot of people who have told me about their children. They can't keep clothes on them. They always want to run around without any clothes on. They just like it. It's fun. It's freeing, right? Naked alone time. It's not necessarily a bad thing if you're alone. Little kids love that. Okay, they like to be nude. They like to show others their genitals. Look what I have. It's like show and tell. There's nothing weird about it for them. They're interested in watching bathroom functions. They use dirty words for the bathroom. They're interested in their own feces. Go figure. They like to play doctor, inspecting each other's bodies. These are natural behaviors for kids in this age. Now, this one's important to understand. How many of you have ever had a kid who stuck something in their nose? Okay. Their ear. Anybody? No? Okay. Some people. Yeah. Kids like to put things in places. They put things in the holes in their body. They will put things in their genitals and in their rectum. They usually do it. It's an exploration and curiosity. That's why they do it. Just the same reason why they stick it up their nose or in their ear. They'll do it. It's natural for them to do it one time if they are being exploratory or out of curiosity. And then when you tell them this is not where peas go, or this is not where beads go, or this is not where whatever it is goes, then they're not going to do it again. Once they've done that exploration, most likely they're not going to do it again. That's natural behavior. Children who do that frequently, that is when it becomes problematic. But a one-time deal, we may go, ooh, but it's just like sticking something up their nose. Same kind of thing. They also like to play house. They act out roles. This is what they're doing. They're seeing it happening in their world, and so they're playing it out. 5 to 7-year-olds are what we call manufacturers. They want to know how babies are made. All of the literature that I found reports that this is an optimum time to tell children about sex. However, that being said, what they also agree is that you should be teaching children about sexuality from the time that they're born. So when they get to be 5, 6, 7 years old and they're ready to ask those how questions, they already have all of the background information. It's not anything that's that big a deal. But this is where that comes in. They're asking for how. They want to know about sexuality. They're developing their moral compass. And what you have to ask is what attitudes are they learning? This is when, from the very beginning, you are teaching children. Parents are teaching children about the values that they have towards sex and sexuality. If you think sex is dirty and you're teaching your child that, that is what they are going to learn. They're developing this moral compass. If you believe that sex is good and is of God, but it has limitations and where it is to be had within the covenant of marriage between a man and a woman, whatever it is, that's what they'll learn. So all of this is happening. Personal privacy is in full swing. My 7-year-old niece at the beach this summer went into the other room to change her clothes. It was the first time I had ever seen her do that. She's 7 years old, like clockwork. They're developing this personal privacy. Okay, let's talk about self-stimulation, because that's a big question among adults in regards to children. So children ages 0 to 7, their sex motives are not that of adults. It's really important that you understand that. When we see a child touching their private areas, we automatically go to the perspective that we have as adults, what the function of that is. But children don't experience that. Children are touching themselves because it feels good, because it's pleasurable, it feels good, and because they're curious, because it is just something to do. We don't call it masturbation in children, because masturbation is to a specific end in orgasm. For children, typically, it is not. Okay. It's normal and sensory. It's sensory based. It's just about the experience. It may not even be the sexual feeling. It just feels good. For little boys, it's just something to hold on to. Right? For little girls, it feels good. They do it when they're going to sleep. They do it when they're anxious. They do it when they're bored. These are the times that you'll experience that. It's important to teach children manners, and it's important to teach them privacy. This is a private part of your body, and we only do this in our house, when you're going to sleep at night, whatever. And this is where a parent's values come into play. So parents can have a variety. They can take a no, don't do it approach. They can take a neutral approach, letting it happen and not saying anything, or they can take a this feels good, but these are the limits to it approach. Okay, so it's really important as parents that they're doing that. So when you're seeing this happen in the classroom for these ages, you just say, I know that feels really good, but that's not something that we do at school. That's not something that we do at church. I know that feels really good, but that's not something that we do here in our class. So you're just acknowledging it, you're setting the limit, and you're moving on. Continuous touching could be a sign of abuse. It could be a sign that they're bored. It could be a sign that they're feeling anxious. So that is, could be indicative of something. So when we get to 7 to 10-year-olds, there's not a lot that's changing in this developmental stage. There's a slow shift from, ooh, he has cooties, to, hey, I think I might be interested in having a boyfriend, whatever that means, when you're 9 years old. Okay? There's this slow shift in that process. At this developmental stage, they are learning to be competent. And so you will see that played out in a variety of ways, but you also might see that played out in some sexual kinds of ways, that they're learning to be competent. And at this point, the scales tip in the favor of peers. Whereas parents always had more influence, at about 8 years old, the scales tip, and now peers have just a little bit more influence than parents do. Hence the reason why it's really important for parents to be talking to children and setting the tone for the values, the morality, the limits, and the education of sexuality before that age. Otherwise, if kids don't know it, where are they going to hear it? From their peers. And they're going to get wrong information, misinformation. So the natural and healthy exploration in this age group is, this is more of an information gathering process. There's looking and touching. There's exploring gender roles and behaviors. But this is only, it's only considered healthy when there is a equal balance of power. That's what's really important. So that when this happens between siblings of a similar age, between close peers in a peer group, that they're similar age, a similar developmental level, that's when it's typical behavior. It doesn't mean that this needs to continue. It's okay to set a limit. That's our private part of our body. We don't touch those parts of other people. We don't show our parts to other people. Okay? It doesn't mean you can't set the limit, but this is typical. They're curious, and they want to know. So little boys at school in first grade in the bathroom showing each other their parts, that's typical behavior. Doesn't mean the teacher can't say, that's not what we do at school. These are private parts of our body. We keep them private. When it's same level, then that's when it's typical. When there is a power differential, an older kid or a kid who's developmentally further ahead, and that's happening, that's problematic. And that's important to know. When they're participating voluntarily, there's not undue pressure. Okay, that is typical, that is natural, between siblings or between children who share mutually enjoyable play. Now, these behaviors are limited in their type and their frequency. This is not something, the natural behavior, the typical behavior, is not something that's happening all the time over and over and over again. That's when it becomes problematic, especially when limits have been set. When an adult comes in and sets a limit, and then a child is continually doing it over and over again, that's a problem. It becomes a compulsion. When it becomes sneaky, that could potentially be problematic. Because these kids, they're lighthearted. They're spontaneous. They're silly. They giggle about it. There's no shame in it. When it's natural, in these on-level peer group, age, developmental, that's typical. The shame comes in, that's a problem. When it's an older person engaging with that child, that's a problem. Another point to make is that their interest in sex and sexuality is about curiosity, but it's also balanced with curiosity and other things. If a kid perseverates, meaning that they are stuck on sex and sexual things at the exclusion of a lot of other things that they really normally would be interested in, that could be the sign of a problem. Okay, so then we get to 11 to 15 years old. This is the next developmental stage, and this is the most rapid period of physical, social, and emotional growth that a child has had since they were infants and toddlers. So they're babies, and you know babies, every day they're doing something new. Every time you turn around, they're doing something new. Toddlers are experiencing the same thing. And then the growth kind of levels out. When you get to puberty, all bets are off. Everything's happening, okay? So they're now concerned with their body image. They are beginning the separation from their parents more towards their peers. Again, another reason to make sure that that foundation is really set for them before this point. Abstract thinking begins. They're able to conceptualize things that they never could before. And the sexual feelings and yearnings begin. Their body is changing, the hormones are raging, and this creates unfocused sexual energy, which can be problematic in preteens in this puberty age. Now, this is a large age span, so girls typically will go through puberty around 11 or 12, some as early as 9. They're finding more and more issue with hormones in our foods that are causing early puberty to kick in for both girls and boys. Boys typically will go through puberty around 14 or 15. So there's a big age span there and a difference. But what happens is because these sexual feelings are so unfocused, it can create confusion in kids. They find themselves to be sexually aroused by kids of the same sex, by people that they don't even find attractive, by deviant behaviors. And it confuses them. This is a natural developmental stage, but what happens is when we give them free rein, then we end up with kids who think, well, I'm attracted to somebody of the same sex, that must mean that I'm gay. When the reality is that that's not that uncommon. So they're going to have these feelings, and it's important as adults that we help them, that we recognize that we don't keep things secret, but that we say, those things happen, and you know what? A lot of kids feel that way, but that doesn't mean you define your life based on these couple of years and these strange feelings that you have. That's also a really important point as to why pornography is so dangerous and so powerful. Kids do not have the capacity to control themselves when they're exposed to porn, especially at this age. If they're already having some strange feelings and arousals, and then pornography is introduced at this point, it's like an instant cocaine addiction. Their brains are developing, and they're so easily influenced that it's really dangerous. So it's really important that kids are being supervised and monitored and taught and helped to avoid that, to not even see it. And the ages that kids are seeing pornography, the very first time, earlier and earlier and earlier. The last study I read said 8 years old. 8 years old. Imagine, remember what you were doing when you were 8 years old. It was not looking at porn, typically, right? But they're exposed to it. Okay, so the factors that, at this point, they also begin experimentation. Okay, that's typical. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying that it happens around this age. But there's four factors that will influence experimentation. The strength of the parent-child relationship. If it's a strong relationship, experimentation is less. The amount of experimentation in the peer group. If they're around kids who are doing it, they're more likely going to do it. Their religious beliefs. A strong faith-based kiddo is less likely to experiment. And then the fourth is the confidence of academic success. This doesn't mean a kid that's making all A's. What this means is a kid who has hope for their future is less likely to experiment in dangerous behaviors or behaviors that they know are inappropriate. Okay, we're going to wrap up because you guys need to get to your final thing, but I want to give you some more information. So as we get to 15 to 19 years old, high school, they're really working hard to establish their identity. Sexuality is just a piece of that. And they're really focused on dating relationships. Peers' influence outweighs that of parents, and it's all about dating. And so what you will see in the kids that you're working with are these values and these attitudes that they've brought with them all the way up until their teen years, and now they're starting to play out in the relationships that they're developing. So I want to give you some tips on how to help kids and how to intervene with them. When you're responding to inappropriate behaviors, there's a formula. And I actually added a piece to it. But the first thing you do is you acknowledge the action. And I'm going to use a little kid as an example. You're touching your private areas. I know that feels really good, but at Bible study, we don't touch our private areas. You may go and play on the slide, or you may sit and sit with me and read a book, okay? Because you have to think about what's their motivation? Are they bored? Are they anxious? Are they worried? Are they just doing it? But each activity that you need to set a limit on with a kid can be done using this model. You identify the action and the feeling. You communicate your limit, and then you give them an alternative. You don't just say, stop doing that. You let them do something else to meet whatever perceived need you think that they are trying to meet. I know that you really like Jasmine, but it's not appropriate for you to flirt with her in that way in class. And so you can either choose to talk to Jasmine respectfully, or you can choose to go and play with the guys. Okay? Those are some really crude examples, but I know that the things that you do in the classes that you work with, that you can come up with some things that are more sophisticated. And it just takes practice. That's really all it is. It's like learning a new language. It just takes practice. But this can be used with any kid in any situation. You acknowledge what they're doing and feeling. You set the limit. And then you give them an alternative. It's important to remember to be aware of your attitude towards sexuality and how you're communicating that. You want to use proper names for body parts. You don't call this a nunu, you call it a nose, right? You don't call this a thing on the side of your head, right? You call it an ear. Right? We have all these euphemisms for genitalia, and what that does is it communicates shame. It communicates that we shouldn't, that part is shameful, and so we cannot say the name, okay? So it's really important that you're using proper body part names when you're talking about those body parts. You'll get a lot of shock and awe initially, and then you'll just be known as the person who calls it what it is. Okay, and the last couple pieces is keeping kids safe. So capitalize this because I think the most important thing that you guys can do to keep kids safe in your programs is to supervise them. You know that when there is less supervision, that is when more trouble happens. And it's really crucial that you're supervising kids well. I worked in schools. I know how hard it is to be around kids. They take your energy, and sometimes when you're with other adults, it's just nice to connect with the adult. But I promise you, when the four of you are standing around chatting, that is when the trouble is happening in your kids' groups. So it's really, really important that you be vigilant and on deck, present with kids when you're with them for a variety of reasons, but especially in this capacity. I know that there are phone restrictions and guidelines, and my recommendation is that kids have less access to tablets and smartphones than you think they need, because that is where they are going to be exposed to things that will suck them in, and then they will share them with their friends. So being really vigilant and really vigilant with kids, and as parents too, I think it's really important. We're finding more and more research evidence that shows that tablets and devices, phones, all of these devices are causing brain damage for kids. But also, that's just one piece of it. But the way that sexual things are passed through these is just prolific. So really limiting the use is really important, especially in next gen. Being aware of adults who spend inordinate amounts of time developing relationships with high-risk kids. Most sexual abuse happens by people kids know that have developed a relationship with them. They're groomed. You've heard that word? That's what happens. Popping in on caretakers unannounced, watching and listening for kids' reactions, and empowering kids to identify and question things that are uncomfortable. And then the last piece is give children privacy. Teach them to respect others' privacy. That's the bathroom, and when somebody goes to the bathroom, we close the door. When you go to the bathroom, you close the door. Teaching them to respect each other's privacy, and also allowing kids to have personal space. Would you like a hug, a high five, or a handshake? That's what I always ask kids when they left my office. I let them choose, what did they want? And lots of kids that I worked with, they wanted a hug. They needed that. But there were plenty of kids, they didn't want that. That was invading their personal space. And when we insist that kids give up their personal space because we think it's the right thing to do to kiss Aunt Millie, then it communicates to them that their body is not special enough to be protected and that they do not have say over their body. So giving kids their own personal space is really important. You don't have to kiss me goodbye. Would you like to give me a handshake instead or a high five? There's a lot of kids who will do that. And as adults, we have to let go of our own personal feelings and say, that's not about me. Or maybe it is about me. Maybe I should ask that question. But giving kids the right to their own body is really important. And then a couple of the other things are just being aware of abuse. We obviously are not going to go into that today, but it's really important. It doesn't matter if you're working with Next Gen or not, that adults need to know what the signs of abuse are for kids, because there is a legal obligation that if you suspect child abuse in any capacity as an adult in America, you're obligated to report. You're not obligated to investigate. That's not your responsibility. You don't have to worry about that. But you're obligated to report. And I can't tell you how many kids would tell me, but I told an adult and they didn't listen. What a tragedy. So it's really important that when kids say something to you that just doesn't seem right, that you communicate to them, I'm going to believe you and I'm going to find somebody to help you. It may not be me. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to listen to you. I have some resources for you guys that I used in developing a lot of the material, both here and in another class that I taught. If you would like copies of this PowerPoint, because I only put the highlights on your handout, if you want copies of this PowerPoint, or if you want a full resource list, email me. My email is at the bottom of your handout. Make sure that you spell my name correctly. It's Robison. There's no N in the middle. And I am happy to send you my resources. Like I said, like Doug and I said, this is just an overview for you, just to give you some information. But if you have any questions, please reach out to me. You have note cards there that we passed out. If there is a situation that you're confused about, you don't know if it's typical or normal or healthy, if you will write that on your note card with your contact information and bring it to me, or Katie's at the back, you can give it to Katie, she's wearing the striped sweater, then we are happy to get in touch with you to answer those questions, because we know that there probably are questions that you have, and this was not an opportunity, unfortunately, for you to ask those. So, I hope you learned some new stuff tonight. I hope you were reminded of some things that you already knew, that you needed to be reminded of. And I hope at some point this evening you had some fun. You have a little bit more fun to be had for the rest of the night. So thank you so much for your time and for being with us at Midnight Madness. And go and be with God. Yes.
You or any of your children go to Kincaid?
No.
Okay. Because my dad's middle name is Robinowitz.
Oh.
All right. And my brother taught some kids at Kincaid whose father changed their last name from Robinowitz to Robinson.
That's funny. No.
And so I thought maybe
it wasn't me.
Made a connection.